This is Behind the Pixels.
With me on a Skype call is David Bailey. David, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Roger. I think that you're in Ireland, I'm in Bosnia, and looking out my windows at the moment with this, well, I've fallen in love with blue skies, and I'm not disappointed again today, but with an unusual amount of fluffy clouds and the occasional shower, but we're supposed to be deep in snow and around about minus 25, so it's nothing like that today. So I don't know how the seasons are going to change, but I suppose my seasons are just as messed up as yours, I suppose.
Yeah, well, the sun is shining today. We've had a particularly wet and windy winter, in fact. We've been flooded. The road, or the street, I should say, in Cork, where my office is now, has been flooded twice. And my business partner actually posted on online. He did a time-lapse video and he posted it online. Now, we're on the second floor, so if the water ever got to my level, we've got much bigger problems, everybody on there. I mean, we're talking Noah's Ark territory there. But we have a flood barrier for the door. So we got away with two floods and only a little bit of dampness. But I know about the changes in seasons that you've been experiencing, because you mentioned this in your video blogs quite a bit, and I know about your love of blue skies because you talk about it quite a bit in your video blogs, which is why we're talking here today. We were talking about smartphone video, or very portable video, and just in case people are going, well, who's David Bailey? I was dialing in for the photographer. Forget him. This is David Bailey, the international military storyteller, and David is particularly skilled in telling video stories. So that's what we're going to talk about. A little bit of background. You live in Bosnia, and just tell us about your video blog, how it came about and what you're trying to achieve with it.
I got involved in social sharing back in 2007. I think the phrase earlier, adopter, is thrown around a lot. And in those early days, I was quite a voyeur, I suppose, of those that were really throwing themselves into social sharing and sharing images and writing, you know, blog posts. And then there was all this about Twitter and Facebook and everything else. And I noticed people were starting to produce video, which I thought was going to be really, really beyond me, because although I'd worked in broadcasting for a bit, and I thought, you know, that I understood media, that this was really, you know, really out of my league, because was I able to do this? And I was very, very quiet, and I just watched, and I had this biting ambition that maybe I could do something. But every time I tried it, I seemed to fall flat on my face, in my own opinion. And then many, many years later, when I came back to Bosnia to settle down, I was taking short clips of video, basically to send to friends and relatives back in the UK, because I'm not very good with the written word. And I thought that I could express myself using this. And they said, well, this was really cool. And then I started to see other vloggers, and I thought, well, heck, you know, let's have a go at this. So over a period of time, I just got hold of an iPhone and just went around doing things and using iMovie on the device itself. You know, I really didn't know how to put a title on it. I'm not a Luddite, don't get me wrong, but I just couldn't see it. And then, of course, as one does, the more you play, the more confident you get with it. And then I'm, you know, titling things to the extent that when myself and my girlfriend were driving around the country, I'd take a little 30-second or 40-second shot and I'd have it all titled. And as soon as I got to Wi-Fi, I put it up. And then it became... I don't think I actually made a decision, Roger. Somebody said to me, why don't you do a vlog about where you are? So it was, you know, okay, I'm an Englishman. I live in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but I go other places, so I'll call myself an Englishman in the Balkans. And after a few false starts, because I get these huge pangs of, you know, I'm not doing anything really well, and, you know, aren't people bored with this? But after a few false starts, as it were, I've now got about 680 of these videos of varying lengths and quality on YouTube, and people seem to enjoy me telling them of life as an everyday person in a village of, well, actually not even a village, actually, it's a hamlet of six houses, and what I see and what I experience in this very unique sort of country. I won't go into the politics and history, but a country that not many people know about.
So let's just back up a bit there, because there are two things that I think immediately will resonate with people, and people will go, ah, now those are worries I have. I've got concerns. Now, first of all, you mentioned that when you first started out, you fell flat on your face, and the videos that you're producing, you didn't feel very comfortable with or weren't up to the standards that you wanted. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what were the kind of things that you were seeing in your work that you thought, well, I can't broadcast this, I'll look like a complete idiot?
Well, I think, most people will have heard of Christian Payne documentally. And in the early days, I mean, he was documenting everything, it seemed to me at least, using video. And then there were other people. And I was placing that as the standard. People that had photography experience, for example, and were just going over to using mobile video, or people that had been videographers and were sort of like, I don't know, dropping the large cameras off their shoulders and picking up these handheld devices. So I set myself, I think, an unachievable goal by, first of all, not really realizing what a story was, that I had a story to tell. And I was trying to compete with other people and, you know, breaking all my own rules. You know, like when I started in radio, I was told, don't try and be an Alan Freeman, be yourself. And it took a long time to realize that the way I was going to tell a story wouldn't be like anybody else. So when people now say to me, you know, I wish I could do that, I'm saying, well, it's very easy. You just don't have to fall down the same rabbit hole that I did. And that is, you'll do it in your way. You'll tell the story. You'll take the shots your way. You'll edit it together your way. And if there is a story to tell, people will watch it. And I think that the production values increase as a result of experience, you know, and that is the practice and playing with the device. And in the end, I think you come of age in your own way. And I now say to people, don't, you know, whoever your role models are, you have to try and ignore them insofar as you're not going to be at their standard on day one. Who knows, you might even exceed their standards. So, you know, I did fall on my, I suppose I set myself too high a standard, or I wasn't happy with it. And it was all unnecessary. And I suppose if I went back again, I would do it completely different. And maybe I'd be doing better content than I am now. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you make a good point. Not everybody could start off Scorsese or Spielberg, or it's just you, as you say, you've got your own level and you have to find that, and that's your starting point. You cannot start at a higher level than where you are. So if you can learn and do it and grow your experience, then you will find naturally that your level of production, if you like, goes up. I mean, the quality is an interesting issue, because, and you've related it there, I thought, quite nicely to story, because while people can look at a video and the video quality might be a little bit suspect, let's face it, we're filming off iPhones and tablets and maybe small video cameras, and the quality isn't going to be the best. So you can't expect that. Now, the quality can be very, very good, don't get me wrong, but that's not, in a way, the consideration that should hold you back, particularly if you're telling a great story. If the story is there, then the maybe slightly wonky production values vanish. It's only when the story isn't there that you really start paying attention to, oh, and actually, this isn't very well filmed either. But I kind of liken it to, look, you know, if you were witnessing the second coming and you filmed it on your iPhone, there's not a single person who's going to say, well, I don't want to see it because it was filmed on an iPhone. they'll rip your arm off to see it. Of course they will. They're not going to care that it was filmed on an iPhone because the story is so overwhelmingly potent. So I think what I picked up that was concentrating on story, and we'll maybe talk a little bit more about that in a second. And also, be yourself, find your own voice, do your own thing, be your own person, and don't try and copy anybody else. That's a really strong piece of advice, I think.
I think we all set ourselves unnaturally high standards. And I think, you know, when you're putting something in the public domain, and let's face it, anything that you publish on the web now is going to the world, or it has the ability, sorry, to go to the world. It's a case of, am I going to make myself look stupid? And I think, you know, it takes a little bit of getting used to, but I think you can get that out of your hands. And coming back to what you were just saying about Scorsese and other people like that, some of these really high production value films, Oscar-winning films now, to get the effect, they're actually giving these wonderful cameramen that make all these wonderful films, and they're taking, for certain scenes, mobile devices, handheld devices, and running around and taking wobbly shots, because that's what people are so used to seeing these days. And I suppose that gives Hollywood the realism today that special effects gave, I don't know, 50 years ago.
I think that's a strong point, because, yes, people are familiar with that level of production. So it's no longer the barrier that maybe we create in our minds. We sort of think, well, nobody's going to watch this because I can't produce the quality. But actually people will, because they're used to it. They're used to this. They're used to seeing, I mean, it's being a little bit mischievous, they're used to seeing handheld videos of kittens on YouTube. So yeah, you can produce that quality, and probably with a little bit of thought, a lot better as well. Because, I mean, your videos are definitely a step above what is commonly available and filmed on an iPhone. Talk a little bit about story, because I like the fact that your videos contain you. You do the voiceover, you appear in them. It's just, I often get the sense that the videos aren't really about you. It's nothing to do with David Bailey. They're all about Bosnia and what a great country it is, and about the people and the lifestyle and the things that you come across. It's almost as if you're a narrator, but you're not the protagonist. Is that intentional, or have I just, is it just me? Is that just how I particularly view your videos?
Well, here's a little secret. I just thought at one time that I could do all these wonderful videos for my vlog and concentrate on Bosnia, and then I would be able to edit and I'd be able to do voiceover after the effect, and I'd be able to mix this all together. And that was the initial plan, only to find that David isn't quite up to using Adobe Premiere or anything like that. So all that goes out the window, and it just becomes, well, how do I actually get this across and then cut away to show whatever? And the painful realization was, the easiest way, and we all look for the easiest way out, is I'm going to have to go on camera. God, that was a shock to me. You know, I really don't. I mean, if I could get rid of having mirrors in my house, I would. but no. And so, you know, editing this together and seeing myself, it's just like, oh, I look awful. And it was just having nice people around say, just leave it, David. Nobody's ever going to comment about it. So being in them, I try to set the scene, and I think it's better for people to see me talk about it than to be this detached voice. And so that's how I do it. But it wasn't intended, Roger, that I would ever appear in any of these. And now it's happened, and people like it, so now I have to do it. And I'm getting more. Don't get me wrong. I am not comfortable doing this. So I take a few deep breaths and I go for it. And wherever possible, I try to do it in one take. And the reason being is I've learned now that every time I go back and do it again and again and again, I just dig the hole deeper.
That is so true. It's so true. I do it with my own podcasts where I record my own intro. I have a conversation with somebody, and of course that doesn't get edited. That's just the conversation. But then when I record my own intro, sometimes I'm recording 10 different ones and they're getting progressively worse as I go on. And it's just that, as you say, the first take is often the best take, and there may be flaws in it, but you know what? People aren't going to haul you over the coals for it. They're not going to stop listening because of it. It humanizes you. So just get on with it. And the other thing is that you can't spend the time. I mean, none of this storytelling is intended to take over your life. It's not intended to get in the way of actually doing a day job. I mean, people listening to this will be wanting to hear how they can fit it in around running their business. They can tell the story of their business without the storytelling side of it dominating their working day. So when you're viewing it or coming at it from that perspective, yeah, you cannot re-record everything. You just need to record and put it out there. Just ship it is the thing that you often hear from a lot of the American gurus, which is just get it out there.
I think, you see, one of the things that I've learned now is walking in the main street of, for example, in Banja Luka, talking to myself into my mobile device, it's quite unusual because, you know, when you're doing it in Britain or in Ireland, you know, you're very self-conscious that people are looking at you. But I find that so much easier to do in the UK. I mean, here it's a completely different language. You know, what's he talking about now? And I think if you can get over that and you're doing things, especially for business, it's the ability, I think, to be able to walk around within the office and everything and just either, you know, if you're going to do an audio podcast or whatever, it's just to have that confidence to be able to talk about what you want to talk about or video about, subject to all the usual rules and whatnot, and not worry about people around you gawking at you or making you feel uncomfortable. If you can get over that, I think that is a massive hurdle, and it's easy to do. It just seems like that wall is 20 feet high. Actually, it's only about 4 inches, but it's like if, you know, when I was a young soldier, we all had to go up in what they call a trinasium, and it was about 15, 20 feet off the ground, and you had to step, Roger, over a 6-inch gap from one plank to another. I swear to God, it looked like 15 meters.
Hmm.
But, you know, at the end, I got over it.
And how do you get over the video? Because a lot of people listening to this will go, yeah, I absolutely, David, that's exactly one of the things that's holding me back. Is it just you have to bite the bullet and just go and do it? And then after a while, that reluctance or that feeling of uncomfortableness just dissipates? Or are there specific things that you did for yourself that made you less self-conscious, if you like?
I did it, and I posted something up on YouTube in the very early episodes of my vlog, and I really wanted the next morning to go and take them off. I just felt so uncomfortable with it, and I think because I didn't get any negative comments, I was happy. I wasn't interested in positive because I thought all that was going to be stage managed. It's weird what goes on in people's heads. But I didn't get anything negative. And once I didn't get that, when it started to happen and I wasn't getting any negative comments, I do get negative comments when you read the comments, but it's all nationalistic. It's all to do with Bosnia, nothing to do with me. So nobody said, oh, you're looking fat and awful. You're an ugly individual. Why are you in front of the camera? I got none of that. And that just made me feel, well, somebody's watching. And you know when you get the clicks up and you see the people viewing, and then you get emails and you get tweets and that, and it starts to build your confidence very slowly. And I think then you're able to handle it. I may just be a very unusual person that doesn't like, you know, I really, really worry about negativity. It affects me. If you were to write something today for a joke on my vlog, like you look awfully fat, David, and your OCD is coming back, I would most probably not make another vlog for about 3 months.
But I get what you're saying there. I mean, it is. We all have this that we don't want to. It's a social thing. It's a human thing. We don't want people to think negatively about us, and we don't want people to talk negatively about us. And of course, because it's a social space online, the social space now includes the entire world, so people can see what people are saying about you. I'm just interested then in what you found has benefited you. You're telling this story, you're doing these great kind of insights into Bosnian life. What has been the payoff for you? What have been the benefits for you?
Personally, I get to practice more. And I like that very much. I like it that my subscriber base grows. So obviously somebody's interested. And the payoff for me is that I get to do something that the country itself is failing to do. And that is to, I won't say educate, that sounds very arrogant, but to make other people aware of what a beautiful place this is and why more international people should come and experience it. So, you know, we can all talk about the fact that in Southeast Europe, in the Western Balkans where I am, everybody or nearly everybody drinks plum brandy, Slivovica, during the day. But it's, you know, if I was to say that to you, you'd say, well, they're all a nation of drunks that go down to the off-license and buy alcohol. Well, there's no such thing as an off-license here. And everybody makes it on their own properties. And then to see it being made, you can quite clearly see that they're not all raging alcoholics, and how they use the fruit. They don't throw anything away, and how very thrifty they are. And for people in my own home country of England, for example, some of these artisan skills, and they are artisan skills, have long since gone. And so I think it's an eye-opener. People find it interesting, I think, because it's so unusual. And I'm trying to say, well, now you've seen it on video, why not come along? And I suppose my dream with pink glasses is that one day somebody's going to come and say, why did you invite all these foreigners into the country? But I think that will be a very positive thing for Bosnia and Herzegovina. So it's me trying to say, you know, I'll show you the country like nobody else does. And I don't know. I think I'm succeeding a little bit, not as much as I thought I would.
But what does shine through in the videos is a love of the place, a passion for the place. I mean, this isn't, and I should clarify immediately, this isn't a blanket, everything is fine and dandy in Bosnia, because you do call things out as well. But when you call stuff out, it's from a position of not spite and not malice or grumpiness. It's from a position of loving the place so much, and that really shines through, and that voice, if you like, and that purpose really comes across in the videos. And I think that's another important aspect of good storytelling, is have a position, have a point of view, don't be afraid to express it, because therein lies in honesty and integrity and authenticity, of course, as well, which makes the videos that much more appealing, because we know that you're not a mouthpiece for some kind of tourist office in Bosnia. You are who you are, an individual who lives there, whose experiences life there every day, and has an opinion on that, but approaches it from a place of warmth, if you like.
Yeah, I'm trying to tee up a visit to the Mine Action Centre, because I don't know, we've got somewhere in the region of, I don't know, 250,000, 300,000 mines to lift still. And only 2 days ago, you know, people going in the woods to get some scrap metal, you know, young child was killed and father seriously injured. So if it was all about tourism, one wouldn't certainly be talking about that. But it's a fact of life here, and the country is safe as long as you don't do stupid things. But, you know, how many of us live in an environment where you drive along the road, and when you look in these rural settings and you go into a village or through a small town and you see high grass in somebody's garden, you know, people like you and I, Roger, would say, can't they keep their house in order? Or is the landlord not doing anything? Well, Roger, that's a sign that there's mines around. And it strikes me all the time, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I should be telling people about this, because it is a reality of life, not where I live, thank the Lord. But and how are people going to solve this? And I think that might be very interesting to people whose window of the world is through their computer.
Can we just quickly, just to round off the conversation, just talk about some technical things, technical aspects of it? So you film your videos. How long does it roughly take you to film a video?
Well, I'm going to stick my neck out here, because I think what Roger Overall does is he does a storyboard, because he's a very sort of like logical person. And I used to be very logical when I was in the army. And when I left, I decided to throw everything, haircuts, shaving, logics, everything out the window. You know, 30 years of it was enough. I actually lie in bed, or when I'm driving around in the car and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll look at this. And I sort of like to put something together, and I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to do it in 5 minutes. So like a little chat at the start, a little chat at the end, and some, I don't know, major recipe in the middle of it. And when I think like that, I go off to do things, and then there's so many other things come from left field, as it were. So I try to film things as I go. I don't particularly go out. I mean, if I go to, say, which I will do later on this year, to the local regatta, it's not all it's all about coming under the bridge. That's what it's all about. Can these guys navigate these rapids and get underneath the bridge? So I'll do something before I get to the bridge. I know that I'm going to talk about something after the bridge, and I'll go down and I'll take some shots of them coming under the bridge, and that's going to be my plan. However, I know that there's going to be something going wrong because Bosnia is totally dysfunctional. Everybody suddenly changes the plan. You know, like, be down there at 1 o'clock actually means be there at 3. And something will come out of left field, and I'll be running around, and I think, this is really, really cool. And then somebody will say, why don't you come and we'll show you this? And the next thing, my whole plan has gone out the window, but I remain flexible. And then I almost probably have 12 minutes of content that I never dreamed I would get. And I carry, you know, the more interesting stuff I get, I just say, I'm going to do that. I'm not one of these people that says, well, it was very nice, but my original plan was to do whatever, and that's what I'm going to stick with. So I sort of storyboard in a way, but I know the door I'm going through. I know the door I want to come out of, and I've got a rough idea of what the corridor looks like that I'm going to walk down. But then again, it might have doors on either side that I didn't see in the floor plan. And, you know, you don't know what you're going to see when you go through those doors.
What editing software do you use, David?
Well, at the moment, I have to say, and this is not a sales thing at all, somebody said that I had to get a Mac, and I ditched my PCs. So I've tried to keep the same stuff. So I will, for shorts, use the onboard iMovie. And I also have, I've invested a little bit of money in Camtasia for Mac. And that allows me, at my level, to do what I need to do. In other words, I can put a music track underneath it and I can adjust the level of that. I have a selection of transitions if I want to go from shot to shot or from scene to scene. I can put my start and finish, and I can have a number of tools available for different types of titling. So it's pretty basic. Both the iMovie and Camtasia for me is it's KISS. It's kept it simple, and you know, I always call myself stupid. So it's if it's not KISS, I'm not touching it, because I've learned, especially when I was in radio, you know, overdoing things. I mean, it's fire and forget, and I don't mean my vlogs to be fire and forget, but I want to put them together, and I want to have a life as well. So, you know, having 80 tracks in a screen and doing this and doing that is not me. It's not what I'm about. I want to show you as quickly as I can what is happening, keep it short, keep the story nice and tight, and take you on a ride with the hope that in the future you might be stood next to me one day saying, well, I remember that. That's the tree, isn't it? Yeah, that's the tree. Do you know what I mean?
And this is what this is all about as well, from the perspective of recording this with you, just to show, look, you don't need a massive editing suite with the latest versions of very powerful software used in Hollywood to edit and grade film. That's not what this is about. As you say, iMovie, which comes with Macs, or if you buy it in the App Store to go on your mobile phone or your tablet, I think it's about 5 or 6 euros. That is software that will do the job very, very, very well for you, and you do not need to spend a lot of time and a lot of money editing.
Yeah, I think there's enough on board these Android and iPhone devices for you to create really, really cool content. It's just a case of, how creative are you? Have you got a story to tell? And are you prepared to jump the confidence broomstick?
Well, I think on that note, that's a really fine thing to end on. You can do it anywhere. You can do it quickly. And it's just a question of, I suppose, overcoming whatever reluctance you're building in yourself that you're creating for yourself. David, that is just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. People listening to this, they're going to want to see some of your vlogs. Where can they connect with you? Where can they see your stuff?
It's quite a long URL, so here we go. It's An Englishman in the Balkans. That's all one word.
AnEnglishmanInTheBalkans.com. AnEnglishmanInTheBalkans.com. David, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Nice chatting to you, as always. ¶¶